Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to this special year-end edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio American. For the past few days and through the rest of this week, we'll be handing out our year-end awards, McLaughlin style. So we've got our martinis, of course, and we've got different categories that we're going through day by day. It'll all lead up to this coming Friday, where we'll name our Person of the Year, Turncoat of the Year, and talk about our political New Year's resolutions. But today, our three categories are Best Idea, Worst Idea, and Boldest Political Tactic. And Jim, you've got Best Idea. Go for it.
Yeah, I think it was kind of a tough selection in this category. I'd say this was kind of a rebuilding year for good ideas. they have some good draft choices coming up, so maybe we'll see some good ideas coming out in 2012. I'm going to go with kind of perhaps an unexpected choice and say the Arab Spring has the potential to be a good thing and a good idea, particularly the uprisings in Syria and more uprisings in Iran. I'm one of those guys who believes that the era of Arab dictators was not all that healthy for U.S. foreign policy. And that was really not a long-term sustainable approach to the region. I did not like the way those dictatorships, used Israel as a scapegoat. They basically, used anti-Americanism as a tool of policy. I realize that what we're seeing in Egypt demonstrates that what comes next may not necessarily be better. But I kind of believe that we have an entire region of the world that has not had anything resembling democracy. And basically been, one autocracy and one brutal force after another and one theocracy after another. So the idea of accountability coming to this part of the region and the idea that leaders have to be accountable to their people, they have to represent popular will, and that they have to actually produce for their people instead of constantly blaming the Jews and blaming the Americans and blaming vast conspiracies, et cetera. I think there, that I still have a small shred of hope that maybe something good will come out of this. I think probably a lot of people call me naive, but again, Greg, perhaps you have a genuine better idea that came out of 2011.
Yeah, I would say the Arab Spring still is a pretty big incomplete. Obviously, what was in charge in some of these countries isn't ideal, certainly from an American democratic perspective. But again, what follows, I think, it is critical. The democracy movement could be good, but if it leads to radical Islamist governments in some of these countries that were more stable under the likes of Mubarak, that ultimately in the long run will be bad for us and bad for Israel. I personally believe that America's national security interests are more important than perhaps the movement towards democracy in other places. I know that sounds harsh, but we live in America. My best idea for 2011, and this is credit to Scott Walker, John Kasich, others around the country, these governors that really knew that they were getting into a huge slugfest with the big unions, the Obama administration, some really ugly rhetoric, moments of physical confrontations, but this idea to try and balance their state budgets by dealing with some of the areas of the biggest costs, and that's these union benefits and pension plans and collective bargaining. In the end, they were painted, of course, as being radical and anti-worker. For the most part, what they were suggesting was pretty darn reasonable. Wisconsin, of course, was ground zero for this, so I'll give Scott Walker credit for really kicking off this effort and really taking the heat. We'll see, I guess, next year whether or not he even keeps his job over this. But the good thing is that a lot of people in 2010 were elected to get stuff done, not just hold the office, and he was willing to do that, and kudos to him and Kasich and others in these different states that are willing to do this. Rick Snyder in Michigan's another one.
I think people will like your selection better than mine, Fred.
Your selection, in fact, of the Arab Spring is the boldest tactic of 2012. But I'll let you get to that in just a second. First, I'll let you talk about the worst idea of the year.
Sure. Obviously, the first one that came to mind was Occupy Wall Street, but that's almost too easy. so I wanted to go with something that I think might be more insidious in terms of a bad idea. Obviously, one of the big events of the year was the shooting in Arizona, the wounding of Gabby Giffords, and we saw two reactions coming out of that. The first was Paul Krugman and others insisting that conservatives are all responsible for this, that somehow Sarah Palin's map created the mentality in the shooter who was clearly deranged, and as a result, all of us should hang our heads in shame because it's all just as bad as if every conservative pulled the trigger, yada, yada. Then Obama goes off and let's change the tone, let's have a new tone, et cetera. And so I think this on-again, off-again new tone after the Giffen shooting is probably the worst idea of the year because in a way, I think I could function in either one of these. I could function with a more polite, more respectful, less incendiary, and less demonizing political culture. I'd be willing to do that. I try not to be too personal or persnickety in my criticisms of liberals and Democrats and President Obama. But, you know, if everyone said, hey, let's raise our game, then fine. I'd be willing to do that. On the other hand, we only hear this when a Republican says something nasty about a Democrat. And when the reverse happens, and you saw, you know, the congressman from Tennessee calling Republicans Nazis, and we saw Alan Grayson continuing his shtick, et cetera, we never hear anybody, you know, very few people are ever willing to criticize their own side. And so my attitude towards the poll crowd, or even, you know, Barack Obama, whose attitude of, well, I'm going to take the high road, but I'll have all my surrogates do all the dirty work. I think if anything, if this whole argument about a new tone is supposed to mean anything, then you can't outsource the dirty work. Then you have to say, no, it's wrong to criticize my opponents personally and to use this kind of language all the time, not just only when it's, you know, for somebody I like. And so I think it just got exposed. I mean, we all kind of knew President Obama was a hypocrite in this matter, but I think it just kind of was depressing that so much hype could be made over this new tone. And within a couple of weeks, nobody cared anymore because, you know, it was okay to make Sarah Palin jokes again. I mean, it was, you know, it revealed that our political culture is exactly what we think it is, and it revealed that so many folks on the other side are hypocrites that we, you know, long suspected they were.
Yeah, exactly. And Obama did engage in it in the worst way during the debt ceiling debate. He talked about how Republicans were holding a gun to the head of the American people. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure what would have been more inflammatory rhetoric in the wake of Tucson than that, but apparently he doesn't get called on the carpet for that. I think the good thing out of this, though, Jim, is that the fact that Republicans and Democrats sat next to each other at the State of the Union address in the wake of that clearly fostered a much more bipartisan spirit in Washington. So we can all be very grateful for that. That really worked.
You know, that should have been the best. Should have been my best idea of the year.
My worst idea of the year is one I should probably give a little bit of a citation to Newt Gingrich, because he actually said it was also the dumbest idea perhaps ever. And that's the super committee that came out of the debt ceiling debate as well. This was a committee of six Republicans, six Democrats, tasked with cutting a little over $1 trillion over 10 years, really cutting increases in spending by a little over $1 trillion over 10 years. They couldn't do it. We knew they couldn't do it. They really didn't have a pressing deadline. And it was just political theater for back in the summer, so both sides could save a little face on the actual debt deal that that got done back in early August. So big surprise that nothing was accomplished, but it's another episode in Washington that gave people almost no confidence whatsoever that their government can achieve what they were sent there to do.
Healthy choice, Greg. Healthy choice.
On to the boldest tactic, Jim.
Now, people are going to be a little surprised, having said, you know, that the super committee was a terrible idea. I will note, people have probably recall me writing about this earlier this month or at the end of last month. I thought Pat Toomey, who I am a big fan of, really made a gutsy move when he basically said, all right, you know, Democrats want a tax increase. And they say tax increase is necessary. How about we eliminate certain deductions? And these would have been pretty sizable. And we end up lowering tax rates, you know, and that when you make both of those changes together, it came up to be, I have to go back and double check, but it's like $500 billion or something, $250 billion. It was a significant tax increase, at least from the eyes of free market small government conservatives. But it was not the $1 trillion tax increase that the Obama administration wanted and that that you know congressional Democrats wanted. And Pat Toomey, a Tea Party favorite, a guy who used to be head of the Club for Growth, I think a guy who has impeccable free market small government conservative credentials, basically put something out to liberals to say, all right, there you go. We've made our concession. What are you guys willing to put on the table again? And the answer was nothing, that you know that they wanted at least $1 trillion tax increase. And as he said to me in this discussion, it's rather revealing that they're not really all that worried about the revenue. They're to them, tax increases are a form are punitive. The whole point is to make a moral point of punishing people who have been too darn successful and need to have be taken down a peg by the, you know, the all-powerful government. And so I think as much as, you know, some conservatives might be tearing their hair out at a guy like Toomey, you know, proposing a tax increase, I think the whole thing turned out to be very illustrative. I think it really indicated that these folks don't really think that hard about policy choices. They don't think that hard about they're not interested in numbers. They're not really interested in you know, bewailing the state of revenue. They just like big tax increases. They are much more gut-based and emotional-based than many people suspect and that their rhetoric would suspect. And so I think that he kind of called them out on it. So I think that was kind of the bold tactic. Because when you propose a tax increase, the other possibility is that Democrats would take it and then, you know, Republicans would be in the possible, you know, situation of raising taxes. And that certainly could have been potentially problematic for the Republican Party. I think it's entirely possible that you know, we might have been thinking that's one of the worst moves of the year if it had actually been accepted. But I think, you know, instead, Senator Toomey illuminated that Democrats are not, you know, they are much more interested in cutting off their nose to spite their face than actually, you know, reaching a deal and you know, addressing the deficit.
Yeah, extremely important. And it is, as you mentioned, illustrative lesson that Pat Toomey brought forward with a lot of criticism from his own side and basically exposing the Democrats for where they really were on this issue. Very good choice, I think. On to mine for boldest tactic, and this is a little bit of a twofer, but I would say the Republicans in the House and their jobs agenda, going after regulations, which I know the media likes to paint as boring and supposedly not actually connected to actual job creation because there's not a massive spending program attached to it because that's what the Democrats do, and so therefore that's the only kind that they understand. But the fact that they went forward and trying to roll back some of these regulations, some of which are very onerous, they're still trying to get rid of Obamacare, but we'll see what happens in the courts and potentially after the 2012 elections. And then just lately in this last flurry before the end of the year with the Keystone Pipeline, proving that they really do want to create jobs. It's not just a talking point. And even perhaps putting it in the president's lap that if he does do this, that he can take credit for it next year. It's potentially risky politically, but it shows that they know that this is a sure job creator and they're willing to do it. Again, another example of people who know that they were elected to do something and not just sit on their hands.
You know, Greg, you seem to have much cheerier choices than me, so I like that.
Well, we'll have many more tomorrow. Three of them, actually, and more eggnog-flavored martinis to go with them. I don't know if that would actually be very good, but that's where we are this Christmas season. Jim, have a great day. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
Looking forward to it, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks so much for being with us during this special week between Christmas and New Year's as we go through our end-of-the-year awards McLaughlin style here in the Three Martini Lunch. We'll have more tomorrow on the Thursday edition of the Three Martini Lunch.